Amazing story of Coral Castle. This hour, we'll take your phone calls with Joe Bullard. His book is called Waiting for Agnes. That was Ed Lead Skaldin's 16-year-old girlfriend. Well, he was young, too, who jilted him. And we are back, starting a new hour with Joe Bullard, with your phone calls, as we talk about the Edward Lead Skaldin. How old was Ed when he was chasing little Agnes?
He was 26. She was 16.
Yeah. They didn't have laws in those places, did they?
In those days, George, that was common.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were arranged relationships, too, weren't they?
Right. And there was a lot of speculation. J.T. Bullard told me that he felt like Agnes's mother was the problem. You know, Agnes...
She didn't like
She didn't care for it. She thought he was too poor. He was just, you know, not the right... She wanted someone more, you know, wealthy, you know, higher education, and she didn't see its potential.
Ed would charge a dime for people to visit Coral Castle, didn't he? Did he make any money doing that?
Yeah.
10 cents? Jeez.
Well, the funny thing is, when he moved from Florida City to Homestead, he used to charge, you know, 10 cents, and he had this... what looked like a statue of a woman, headless woman, and it said 10 cents, drop it in here. But when he moved to Homestead, he went up to a quarter, and so he hid the 10-cent stone thing so nobody would see it so he could go up to a quarter. When he died, they found 3,800 $100 bills stuffed in a pipe.
And that was pretty good money then, wasn't it? 51 when he died.
A lot of money. Yeah. And he, like I said, Ed lived very miserly, you know. All his tools came, everything, what people don't understand is everything came from a junkyard. All his barbecue smoker came from the transmission of a 1930 truck.
Popular culture really talked a lot about him. As a matter of fact, Billy Idol wrote him The Sweet 16 was all about Agnes.
That's right.
I mean,
that was, I really thought at that time we were going to get a movie done, you know, Billy Idol's doing it. I'm like, oh my God, we're going to, but it just seems like it fades from the news and people forget about him. You know, he's the most unfamous person that should be famous. You know, I mean, I love Tesla, but you know, Tesla never moved 30 ton stones.
Well, I remember that In Search of Show too.
Yeah.
It was fascinating, baffling, wasn't it?
Oh. And Leonard Nimoy did such a beautiful... That was one of the best documentaries ever done because they actually showed you Ed getting beat up, you know, riding the truck, you know, carrying the stones into Coral Castle, and it was beautifully done.
Was he a nice guy?
Oh, God. Everybody loved him. You never heard a bad word about him. All the kids... He loved children. He knew he was never going to have any. But the kids would just come there, George, and, you know, poor kids, everybody, he'd cook them hot dogs and lemonade, and he actually sort of adopted one of the little boys that I wrote about in Waiting for Agnes there. And, you know, the little boy was crying one day because he didn't have the money to buy a bow and arrow, and Ed bought him a bow and arrow and taught him how to use it, and everybody was just, you just couldn't help but love Ed.
What did he do for a living?
Well, basically, there was no taxes in those days, and he had no electricity. His water came from a well, so he really didn't have any expenses. He grew a little garden there. Some people said that he would trap a rabbit or two, but a lot of the women from the churches came on Sunday, and they all had picnics. And they, from what JT told me, they left him apple pies, fried chicken.
Well, at 100 pounds, he didn't eat much anyway.
He didn't eat. Well, George, the man never slept. He worked. He on the sundial there. He had a man should work from 9 till 4 in the, you know, 9 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, and they said he just would work all night from midnight till 6 in the morning. Maybe he'd take a cat nap, get back up, and go to work.
Did he live at Coral Castle?
Lived at Coral Castle, right in the. He had a little living quarters there, and actually, I think we talked about this last time. You were talking about his math. And there's 16 steps that lead up to his living quarters, and you're trying to figure out all this complicated math. What does 16 mean? Is it something to do with the heavens? No, it was Agnes was 16, and he said every morning when he goes down and every morning when he comes up, he's walking up those stairs, 16. He's remembering Agnes. So that was his way of remembering her.
Well, let's go to the phones now and get things started. Let's go to Carol in Tallahassee, Florida. Hi, Carol. Go ahead.
Hi, Joe. I am loving this show and remembering how I saw the same In Search of show that you did. Was that in the 70s?
It was actually, Carol, in 1978.
Yeah, and so I was so excited, and it was so mysterious. I organized an adventure trip and took my three young kids down there. We got on a train and we rented a car and went to see Coral Castle way back then. I still have a lot of the papers and things that we got from there. I remember going into his quarters. Did he sleep in a hammock?
He actually slept on three boards with the burlap sack, and it was hanging from the ceiling, if you remember, Carol. And that was so he could sweep under it.
Yeah. And he did a lot of his work mysteriously at night so that nobody would see a lot of the mysterious heavy stone moving that he did.
That's right. And, you know, a lot of people said, well, it was because of the gravitational pull of the moon. There was a lot of different theories. You know, he wore actually iron soles on his shoes. And one guy called me from California and said, hey, that was to keep him from floating off from those magnetic waves down there, you know. But actually, he was so cheap, he took his shoes to the shoemaker and said, put these iron bumpers on there for me, because he kept wearing his shoes out on the coral stone. So there was two purposes. Plus, when he rode his bicycle around, they said it actually charged his body from the metal soles on his shoes.
Well, I'm really liking this, and you're telling me a few things that I didn't know before or had forgotten. I remember that we did go into what the car was called, the Garden of the Moon, and we saw the mysterious gate, that the heavy stone gate.
Mm-hmm. Push with your finger.
Yeah, right, yeah.
That was, until it stopped working, the most marvelous. I mean, when you see it and you see how heavy it is, 9 tons, and that little 3-year-old girl, the famous photo of her pushing it, that Ed did that on every tour just to show how in the world you could do that.
Well, we love the trip, and my kids, who are now full-grown adults, still remember that.
I'm so happy you got to see it here. You live in Florida. You know, we've got the greatest structure in the world, and it's not talked about. You know, the governor, believe this or not, no Florida governor, no really important person has ever gone down. This is the 100th year of Coral Castle. There's no banquets. There's nothing to celebrate.
Really? Why not?
George, you tell me. I have gone down to that many times.
They must know about it.
They do know about it. They know about it.
How many acres does it engulf?
It was 10 acres. Some of it was sold off. It's probably about 3 or 4 acres now. But, you know, you asked me, George, what made me so interested in it. When you walk in there, and like Carol can probably tell you, it's like Ed just walked out of there yesterday.
Yeah, it's like time stood still.
Yeah, there's nothing. And like she was saying, those kids, you can go down there, swing all those chairs. You can't hurt anything. You know, Ed used to say, I charge any hurricane to blow up against my walls, it'll lose. Well, when Hurricane Andrew came in there, it busted all the meteor things at 250 miles an hour. Coral Castle was the only thing that stood up.
Text and tweets. Tom, what do you have for Mr. Bullard?
This one in from Nancy in Waco, Texas. Is there any chance that drugs or alcohol played a role in Ed's construction of Coral Castle?
Drugs or alcohol? Wonder what she means by that. What do you think?
No. His strongest weakness, sometimes he had a root beer.
That was it.
He never touched anything. Rarely drank any kind of alcohol.
I don't think he would have been able to.
No.
Not to do what he did.
No. The man worked himself to death.
It used to be called Rock Gate, right?
That was the original name, Rock Gate.
And who named it? He did?
He did. He actually called it Rock Gate. When he died, of course, they wanted a more, you know, kind of...
I like Coral Castle. It sounds better.
Yeah. Rock Gate doesn't really explain it, but I loved it when... And he didn't say it publicly, but he talked about the Stargate part, you know, the part that he really... He would talk to Mr. Bullard and everything. He would talk to people who he trusted, but he never said much publicly because after he started talking about Mars and all those things... You know, people kind of, and then when the 38 War of the Worlds came out, the Martians landed, he had some troubles.
That was a classic. Let's go to Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hello, old friend.
Hey there, buddy, old pal. What a great, great show. I'm so glad I caught it tonight. I didn't know who was going to be on until I started listening. But, George, you probably know my background a little bit with Coral Castle. I lived there in Homestead for 3 years back in 87, 88, and 89. And actually, I think I've met Joe at the Coral Castle. I almost felt like a tour guide there. I'd be talking to somebody in the Cracker Barrel, and they'd mention Carl Castle. I'd tell them all about it, and next thing you know, I'd be taking 15 people out there.
You were an ambassador.
And probably charged them, knowing you, Barry, right?
As a matter of fact, $2 a piece is not bad.
A little bit in the little pocket change for you.
You got it. But listen, I've got a little crazy theory and hypothesis, George. You know my background in biochemistry without the PhD, of course.
Exactly.
And if George, I mean, if Ed Leaves Common had the ability, maybe, to use that black box on top of the tripod type thing he had and change the chemistry in the rock. All you have to do is change those Carl molecules to helium, and all of a sudden that 10-ton block of stone doesn't weigh hardly anything, and you can move it around with a feather.
That's correct. That's entirely correct.
You're like a scientist, Barry. Thanks. Appreciate that.
Yes.
He would have gotten along with Leeds Skaldman.
They'd have been buddies.
They probably would have. Do you think Ed would have told Barry how to move those blocks, though?
No, I don't think so.
No,
he took it to the grave.
It was a secret. But the Egyptians who built the pyramids knew the secret as well.
Yeah.
They tapped into each other somehow.
Yeah. And what I love, too, is, you know, he talks about Yucatan, he talks about Peru, he talks about Asia. George, I think there was, and you've hit on this beautifully, I think there was a whole network that they went around the world. You know, when Atlantis, the theory was when Atlantis fell, that all those peoples that were there that had that advanced knowledge went into all those different areas. And, you know, Ed used to say, you know, everybody thinks Atlantis was, you know, off the coast of Greece and all that, but he said, why couldn't there be another Atlantis here off the coast of Florida?
Mm-hmm. Off of Bimini.
Off of Bimini, exactly. Where there's pyramids down there.
Yep. Next up, let's go to Reba in Colville, Washington, west of the Rockies. Hey, Reba, welcome.
Oh, good evening.
You're not Reba McEntire, though, right?
Pardon?
You're not Reba McEntire by any chance.
No. No relation. Anyway, I thought it was rather coincidental here I just recently heard him say that he heard that program In Search Of in 1978. Well, in numerology, that adds up to 25, which equals 7.
I think he said 1979.
It's also interesting that Leonard Nimoy was added up to 25, which equals 7. In numerology, that's what his life path was. And being a 7, he would have been, he was a perfectionist. But anyway, I thought that was interesting, and that was the person who influenced you in researching the Coral Castle. And I'm just kind of curious, what was the gentleman who actually built the Coral Castle, what was his birth date?
I've never been able to...
He was born in 1887, we know that.
Right, I'm not sure of the actual month, but yes, it was 1887.
I was just curious if you knew the whole date. But
no, I wish I did. I've had people go over to Latvia, and there's one cousin left over there, but you can't find his home. It's like he didn't exist.
John, but you January 12th, according to Tommy, 1887.
Is that right? January 12th. Okay,
you can run some numerology numbers. But you said In Search Of was 1979, not 1978, right?
No, now, as far as I know, it was 1978.
That oh, really? Okay.
Uh-huh. Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Then she's right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 1978.
Numerology. Chris in Oklahoma. Hey, Chris, take it away.
How are you doing?
Great.
Yeah, I'd like to say that to me, Edmund Skellen was interdimensional because ever since I was a kid, at 4 years old, I would go into these, like, they call them thunder dreams. I'd basically go into my top of my head, I remember, and it would just shock me all over the place like the shark in Jaws. But when I came out of it, a couple of times they had to throw me into the cold water.
Wow.
But as it continued, I started seeing this man dressed in slacks from the shoes up. And as I was going older, and then that's when I started seeing like paranoia stuff, you know, some dead people down and on.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was going older, By the time I was 12, I started seeing the full figure guy. It was like a phantom because he was dressed in a suit, tie, slack, but his face was kind of blurry.
Wow.
So one day, by the time I was 12, I was in there and I had the dream. And here's this old guy comes on this old rusty bike. And he's coming right to my house. And I'm looking, it's broad daylight. And I'm dreaming, I go, here's that guy. I go, but he's not in a suit and tie. He's just casual, but he had the little basket on the front and the old rusty bike with fenders and everything.
That sounds like it.
Like, wow. Yes, I'm like.
Did you say you have thunder dreams?
Yes, I did. Absolutely.
Wow. That's a beautiful. Do you have any Native American background?
Yes, I do.
Wow.
How'd you know that, Joe?
I just felt some weird things coming through the phone line here.
Now, you know, when you went to Honduras and you looked at and talked with those indigenous people,
right?
How did they know the things they knew, these ancient practices?
They said that a lot of the stuff has been passed down to them from their elders. And when I got through down there, the interpreter told me, he said, there's parts in there that they wouldn't let, that I haven't even been into, he said, and I can't go into. And they won't talk about it, very much like some of the Native Americans that I know. They just have this, just like this gentleman here with thunder dreams, they have a different way of looking at things. They're open-minded. They don't, you know, they don't see it as weird or strange that you know, someone might say something about it. I think they're just people, George, that just like this gentleman here with where he said the thunder dreams, they're just open. And I think that's the main thing. Like Ed would sometimes sit in those chairs down there and just meditate, just concentrate, close his eyes, sit in a chair, and let those electromagnetic waves or whatever he was doing. And I think these indigenous people have that skill. I wish I had it. In a way, it kind of scares me.
Where did he get the limestone for the structure?
You talking about Ed?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're in Florida here, and especially down in that area, George, that limestone goes, there's a whole bed of it. There's only like 2 or 3 inches of good topsoil, and then for like, 3,000-4,000 feet straight down, it's everywhere. But the weird thing is, imagine this. Imagine going out on a flat stone palace there. How would you cut that stone out? Let's say you cut
and,
a square
and block. Pull it out.
And get it out. How do you do
that? And then where'd he put it?
Yeah. Well, you know.
Did he have a flatbed truck out there?
Well, no. You know, the story, the first time that the man that took him in said, he said Ed went to the junkyard, and he got a hoist and some chains and all this kind of stuff. Well, when the man, Ed said, come back in 3 weeks. Well, when the man came back, Ed had his shirt off. There was a 10-ton stone balanced in this tripod hanging on this chain.
How far was the quarry from Florida City where he built it originally?
Well, the quarry was the whole town of Florida City and Homestead. It's all limestone.
I mean, so could he have, regardless of how he pulled it out of the ground, could he have chipped away at these stones and then just, a few hundred feet from where he built it?
Well, what he did was when he cut this 10-ton block out, he just cut the block out. I mean, you could still see the hole where he cut it out. It was hanging over the hole. So he didn't move it anywhere. He just lifted it up out of the air.
Remarkable. Okay, stay with us. Joe's websites, well, he doesn't have them working anymore. Joe, you don't have them working anymore, do you?
I've been gone for 5 years, George, and when I do research, I just stop everything. So
time to get back, huh?
Right, time to get back. You got me fired up again.
There's Facebook. There's new stuff, Joe, since you've been away.
You know, George, I told Lisa Lyon I'm a dinosaur, and then I don't even have a phone.
We're going to get you back. We're going to come back and take final calls, as a matter of fact, on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Linda Moulton Howe, our investigative reporter, joins us with some great stories, followed by conversations with Linda, your ability to make a phone call to her. And welcome back to our final segment. George Norrie with you, along with Joe Bullard. And we are going to take your final calls, of course. Tom's going to take your text and tweets. If you had to speculate, Joe, how do you think Ed moved those rocks? I'm sure you have rattled your brain to try to get that answer.
Yes, George, I'm convinced that he did use I used to call his magnetic machine a perpetual motion holder. I'm going to call it anti-gravity machine now, because I believe that he tapped into those, like Casey said, you know, those. I think he manipulated those. He called the magnetic forces, he called them cosmic forces. And I think that he took that machine, either he wrapped that cable around it from the iron cable around the stone, somehow, like Barry was talking about, flipped those poles. We have not duplicated that, George, because nobody goes down there. Nobody pays any attention. The actual plans to build that anti-gravity machine are in his books.
Jeez.
Now, they're very complicated, but I'm just thinking that he had to have tapped into that. And we've talked about the ley lines, the grid lines. Those grid lines run through Coral Castle. They run through the Great Pyramid. They run through Stonehenge. And when I say these grid lines, ley lines, it's a fancy word, really. It's an electric line is what it is. It needs water as the catalyst, just like our battery. And, you know, they've proven that the Great Pyramid had water at one time around it. So I think he had tapped into those electromagnetic forces. And his whole book on magnetic current, he basically told you it's an anti-gravity device.
Just an amazing story. I mean, it really is. Why don't you think science is going down there to try to investigate this?
George, it should be in a laboratory.
My God, it's right there.
Nobody from Florida goes in there. Nobody.
I mean, I'd x-ray the blocks. I would just do everything I could to try to find out how in the heck this guy moved these things.
And, George, here's the thing about it. You know, gas is, what, $2.50, $3 a gallon, whatever, here in Florida.
Four bucks here in L.A.
Okay, $4 there. George, his goal was, he said, if you'll take my machine, you'll put it in every car. It'll cost about $3,000 to put it in. Now, this was way back, to put it in your house. And he said he believed in giving free electricity. See, he was going to get the patent, but then he was going to give it away. Well, you know, Rockefeller and Edison and all those guys came in. Tesla was along the same line as Ed. He wanted to do the same thing, and they came in and said, Rockefeller and Edison said, no, we're going to charge. They went into the DC or the AC, I forget which one it was. But Ed was telling you, energy's free.
Yep, he was right.
And he said, once you put those magnets in motion, they will never stop until you stop the current. Some guys went down there a couple of years ago, George, before some of the other stuff was stolen off that machine, and they told me they had a light bulb running off of it.
That's amazing. Let's go to the phones again, east of the Rockies, JP in St. Louis. Hi, JP.
Yeah, good morning, George, and your guest. Good
morning.
I'm a long-time listener, and my one regret is I've been to Florida a bunch of times, and I knew about it, and I never went there. And next time I go, I got to go.
Next time, that's right.
My brother went there, and I had two quick questions. One was, I heard a story, something along the lines of when he moved from that one location to where it is now, there was a truck with stone blocks in it, big, heavy stones. And he told the workers to go away now after they had it there in the truck, go away, way back, you know, go away for a while. And then when they came back, they heard some kind of a humming sound, and he was out of breath. And I'm wondering if he used some kind of vibration, a low vibration or something like that, or sound to move them. And the second thing, I heard that big stone door was on a Ford axle, pivoted on a Ford axle, and I heard that it rusted through or something. I thought they replaced that axle. Did anyone ever try to replace it to put it back in balance?
They tried, and they did not. They were not, believe it or not, they were not able to duplicate the work that Ed did. That gate still does not swing. And you're correct about the gentleman there. Some people said the man left and came back in 30 minutes. Some said an hour. But, yeah, he had three or four of the heavy stones loaded and ready to go.
It baffled the truck driver regardless of when he came back.
Baffled him, absolutely. And think about it. With all our technology today, they could not, and they still can't fix that gate. It still doesn't work today.
What about sound resonance to move those blocks?
Okay, there was many theories, and some people said they heard a humming noise. They also said he could, now this sounds bizarre, but they said he could sing a certain musical pitch, or that he had a phonograph record there with a certain pitch. Somehow he was able to move these stones with sound. And he also, George, built a, we didn't mention this, but he built a wire grid over his living quarters. Now, he said it was to tap into, to get free radio stations and to get free music. But there's also been theories that that copper wire grid up there helped him to tap into that electromagnetic force and move those stones.
Well, it's very possible that he tapped into the frequency and was able to use resonance sound to vibrate those blocks and basically become anti-gravity and just float them into place.
That's correct. That's the theory.
I think that's possible, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It, with Ed, anything's possible.
Tom in Ashland, Kentucky, our first-time caller. Thomas, go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. You've got a great show.
Thank you, sir.
I've been a listener now for 4 years. I run a motorized paper route down here in Boyd County in Ashland, Kentucky, and I listen late at night, and I love your show.
Well, you keep doing what you're doing.
I want to make a comment about the 1978 In Search Of show Leonard Nimoy had.
Sure.
I actually saw that, and I was a truck driver at the time, and I noticed two things about that show. Number one, the little truck that was hauling the stones down the dirt road could not have supported, the frames and the wheels would not have supported the weight of those stones if they actually weighed what they were supposed to weigh. So they had to be zero weight or nearly zero weight. Mm-hmm. And when he unloaded those stones, it was my understanding that he did have the truck driver walk away, but he didn't have that device with the tripod and things with him. Whatever he used to move those stones, he had to have on his person. And I had a theory about that. He said the Egyptian pyramids were built the same way, and mm-hmm. we're just talking about magnetic resonance as being a possibility or sound. And the one thing that I know that they had during the Egyptian times that they have today is a tuning fork. And if you could strike the right note with the tuning fork and place it on those stones, I think the molecular structure would line up, and it would weigh nothing. And
you might be right, though.
He could move them anywhere he wanted to.
That's a good
for
point.
A certain period of time. I don't think it would stay that way, but for a certain period of time, they would probably not weigh anything. And I'm going to get off here and listen to it.
All right. I'd
like to have you comment on what I had to say. You've got a great show, and I love it.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Go ahead, Joe.
I was just going to say, there's so many people out there like this caller here that, I mean, I just love these people that come up with these ideas because we just don't know. And that caller was that's a great idea, the tuning fork idea. You just don't know with Ed, George, until we go down there and investigate and get some people. Like I said, I'm just an old country boy with curiosity. I don't have the math and the science to really grasp a lot of it. So these callers that come in with these, that's what I love about Coast to Coast. The job you're doing, nobody's doing this. Thank you.
What about the possibility, the real possibility, that science does know these answers and doesn't want anybody to know about it?
That is absolutely possible, George. And I had a lot of people, since we've been doing this, I've had several people come to me and say, you better stop talking about that magnetic generator and anti-gravity. There's still forces out there that don't want us to have free energy.
Good point. Tom, you've got a final text or tweet for Joe. Go ahead.
Yeah, Joe, this one from Sandro in Valencia, California. What are Joe's thoughts on why Ed would not have shared his building secrets with anyone?
Now, that's an interesting question. Why keep it a secret?
That's one thing. That's one of Ed's quirks. And if you read his books, he was a fanatic that you don't work, you don't eat. And what he said was, if I give this secret away, you're not going to be talking about me. You'll say, well, I know how he did it. The mystery's gone.
Who cares, right?
Stimulate the education and the mind. He wanted to say, if you want to know what I know, read the books I read. Well, you'd say, well, Ed, what books did you read? He goes, well, you'll have to find that out yourself. He wanted you to come and explore it yourself. And that, right or wrong, it was his theory, his ideas, and he said, I want you to come and learn. You cannot take my knowledge without learning it. He was big on people reading and educating themselves, and just like that caller there, those theories, he said, what I'm going to leave behind is going to make people curious. They're going to have to come see what I did and learn what I learned, and then you'll be educated.
Let's go to Clay in Miami, Florida. Hi, Clay. Welcome to the show.
Hey, George and Joe. How y'all doing?
Okay, Clay. Thank you. Bye. You been down there?
The first time I heard Coast to Coast was with Joe Bullard. It was about Coral Castle back in 04.
Wow, that's right.
And I've been hooked ever since.
It's a great story.
Oh, yeah. Hey, but I just want to confirm, you know, that the first time I went there, we were just little kids in elementary school back in the 60s, and they did have one of the girls in our class. We were on a field trip, and they had her push that 9-ton gate in the back with her finger, and it just swung wide open.
Right. Yeah.
And the amazing thing in there is, one of the amazing things, that they don't rock anymore, but were the rocking chairs. They fix them up, so, you know, for reasons that they've done rollover on somebody's foot or you know, something
he
like
had,
that.
And he had 25 of them out there.
Right.
Yeah, but they've kind of filled them with gravel and stuck it underneath them, so you can't do that anymore.
Can't rock them?
No, but I wanted to ask about the shoes, and I think you answered that a little while ago, because I remember looking at the shoes he made with the metal on the bottom. I mean, I was curious about that, if it had anything to do with magnetics or anything like that.
From California called him, and I don't know if you remember that show, but he actually said that he believed that there was that magnetic force down, and I had never thought of this, and he said Ed had those on his shoes to keep him from floating away. And there are points in Coral Castle. Now, I haven't been down there in a while, but the last time I was there, one of the guides who used to be there showed me these points. Your body's stronger in some points and weaker in other. And he may have used those. You know, he may have just said he put the shoes on there, the iron shoes, to keep from wearing his shoes out. But it also may have been the electromagnetic force down there was so strong when he's working. He did need those iron soles. So that's something I never thought of. That's where...
That makes sense.
Yeah.
If you had a chance to talk to Ed Leeds Skolnin, had he been alive today, what would you ask him?
I think I'd have been speechless. I'm not sure.
If everything you've investigated over him, you'd be speechless?
Well,
you've got this chance to talk to the guy?
You know, one thing I wouldn't ask him was how he did it.
You would not?
No, sir. No, because I don't want to know.
Why not?
The mystery would be gone. I've been in it 34 years, and it would be just like a Christmas present. It's a Christmas present that's still under the tree, still wrapped, and I just love looking at it.
You don't want to know what's in the package, do you?
No.
Interesting. I think I would. I have to. That's me.
I've been in it so long, and I wanted it so bad that now I said, no, I don't want it, and then maybe it'll come to me.
Joe in Monterey, California is with us. Hi, Joe.
Hi, George. Okay, I want to know if this sounds about right, because he's close to the castle and he might know some insights. I feel, okay, that Ed and Agnes are soulmates from 25,000 years ago. I also feel
maybe
that they're from the Sirius star system, which is in Orion, and they call it the Gates of Orion, hence you have stone gates.
Wow.
His monument is to have Agnes and him find that castle and wake up to who they were so they could be together again. This is soulmates. This is an act of love.
Beautifully put. He actually had dreams and visions before he died of seeing her again. So what you're tapping into there is exactly what he couldn't wait to go. He was ready to go because he said, I'm going to see her again.
He wanted to. What else you have for us, Joe?
Well, 25,000 years ago, Atlantis fell, and there were a lot of star travelers, and they died. But they traveled, and they went to other places. Some of them escaped, and they built these beautiful monuments to where they came from so they could find it and wake up. Some of your pyramids are aligned to the star Sirius, and that's in Orion.
Yeah, you're right.
And they may have what they call spontaneous remission or a spontaneous past life regression.
And let me ask you, Joe, has anybody walked through Coral Castle with any kind of device, any kind of radioactivity, any kind of Geiger counter that would record something?
No, not to my knowledge. I wish that would happen. George, you know, maybe we can stimulate some people to do that. Maybe this show will help people to go down there. And, you know, this should be a living laboratory. It should be an an education. It should be a university. And so far, there's just nothing being done, George. It just doesn't happen.
That just baffles me.
And it's right here in our backyard. Nobody knows about it in Florida. Listen, there's more people in California, Central and South America. When I was selling books, I sold books in Canada. You know, of course, Ed was in Canada 4 years. The Canadians, you know, they love it. And people right here in Florida, they don't even know about it.
You know, if we were going to ask Ed that question about how did he do this, I don't think he'd answer us.
He would say, he'd tell you about, you know, the magnetic stuff and, you know, that kind of those were typical answers that he'd give. He would say stuff like that because he knew you couldn't figure it out.
You got that right.
So he'd always give you an answer. He never would just stone face go, don't ask me, that would be rude. He would always come up with, well, yeah, you know, it's. And one of his perfect sayings was, well, it's not that hard once you find out how to do it.
Good point.
That was his standard reply.
Joe, thanks. Keep in touch with us. Anything break out there, just let us know, okay?
George, I'll do it. Thank you again, and appreciate all the time.
You got it. Joe Bullard with his book, Waiting for Agnes. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.